Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am great.
Well, good.
What's going on with you? What do you got for me today?
I am excited to tell you these stories because both of them...
We have two.
We do. Both of them are so unbelievable, you would think that they are fake, but I can assure you they're not.
Okay.
I was researching one story, and then it was like almost long enough to be a full episode, and so I tacked on another one at the end that is equally as unbelievable and feels like it should be fake. They're not really related to each other, but like... It's going to be a fun time. We're going to have plenty to talk about.
I'm just so intrigued. I have no idea what I'm walking into. So you don't have a theme. It's just like bonus story.
I could probably come up with a theme. I'll check back in.
Survival.
Well,
that's
yeah.
The theme.
The second one doesn't even really fit that theme.
Wait, really?
Yeah. It's just kind of a story that I heard about and was like, wait, what? Like it feels like it should fit the podcast, but it like doesn't really.
Okay.
We're just
going
to be
excited to see what you've cooked up today, Chef.
Thank you, Chef. We're going to be a little fast and loose with the survival of it all today.
Okay.
Which is fine. But before we jump in, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast to get access to a bunch of bonus episodes. We also have perks like you get your episodes early, they're ad-free. Our patrons get to vote on the stories they want to hear. It's a lot of fun. Check it out.
What a deal.
That's what I'm saying.
I'll keep saying it.
But let's talk about the West End Baptist Church explosion.
Okay.
Okay. This took place in Beatrice, Nebraska, and it's Beatrice, not Beatrice. I looked it up. In 1950, the population was around 11,000 people, and today it's still only around 12,000. So this is a very small farming town in the middle of Nebraska. Everyone knows everyone, and it was also a very religious town. In 1950, the group we're going to be talking about were only a few generations removed from the founders of Nebraska, but they were like the families. They're related to like the families that were there. So these are like the OG people kind of thing.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, at least one of the families was like directly descended from the people who settled Nebraska. Not that that super matters to the story, just a fun little fact. But our story today takes place on Wednesday, March 1st, 1950. A woman named Martha Paul was preparing to head out to the Westside Baptist Church to lead the church choir in their weekly rehearsal. The choir was made up of 15 local residents, some kids and some adults. Martha's daughter, Marilyn, was also a part of the choir. Marilyn Ruth Paul was 18 years old and was the pianist at the West End Baptist Church. That evening, she decided to take a little nap right after dinner before choir practice that night, and Marilyn and her mother were actually planning on getting to the church a half an hour early that night so Marilyn could have a couple extra minutes to practice by herself before the singer showed up. But Marilyn hadn't woken up from her nap when she expected to. When her mother realized that Marilyn wasn't awake, she woke up her daughter, but at that time it was only 10 minutes before choir practice, which meant they were definitely going to be late. Which wouldn't have been such a big deal, but nobody was late to choir practice because Martha was well known in the community for being very dedicated to her job as choir director and was very strict. Martha Paul had been the choir director at the West End Baptist Church starting in 1920, so it had been 30 years of her being the choir director, and she ran a very tight ship. One of Martha's biggest pet peeves was tardiness. She was very vocal about not liking when people showed up late.
Sounds like a lovely lady.
I'm sure she was, but she was a stickler for being on time. And hey, I can respect that. As a person who shows up to every single event I've ever been a part of ever early, I can appreciate people who are on time.
Yep, I understand. And I take the opposite position where I am usually late to most things.
Well,
by small amounts.
Yeah, tiny amounts.
And
I've definitely gotten better.
You just gotta be like, ah.
Well, it depends. I think when you're going to something like a rehearsal or something that requires a group to be there, you should be on time, maybe even a little early, at least for me. But if you're going to like a social event, like a party or like a whatever, a couple minutes isn't going to kill you. Honestly, fashionably late is like cool. So
that's where I'm at.
All right. But Martha wasn't into fashionably late. She was of the opinion, if you're not early, you're late. On time is late, basically.
This is what my hockey coach used to do. If you're not early, you're late.
Oh, yeah, totally. My people, too.
Maybe that's why I hate it so much.
Sure, it was forced upon you.
Yeah.
I just embraced it. I was like, no, I totally agree. And now whenever I'm running late to anything, I'm entirely too anxious. So,
yeah,
you know, it's not great on my end either. But anyway, Martha insisted that every Wednesday, choir practice started promptly at 7:25 p.m. Not 7:30, 7:25 was when you were going to start. The small 15-person choir usually made it to the church by 7:15 to get settled, say their hellos, and be fully ready to begin singing when Martha expected them to at 7:25. Evenings in Nebraska in March are on the chilly side, so that Wednesday evening, Pastor William Kempel decided he would turn on the heat in the building, that way the choir wouldn't be so cold during their practice. Once he finished up all his other preparations, he left the church late in the afternoon around 4:30 p.m. and went home to his wife and 18-month-old daughter to eat dinner and then head back to the church for the choir practice at 7:25 sharp. What he didn't know at the time was that disaster was about to strike. Somewhere in the church's heating system, there was a gas leak, and for the next 3 hours, the church had filled with gas. At 7:27 p.m., the church exploded, which was heard throughout the entire small town of Beatrice, Nebraska. It shattered the windows of nearby buildings. It caused power outages throughout the city. The town's radio station lost its signal, and the church was in rubble. The roof caved in and the walls collapsed. It was demolished, and it was clear that an explosion like that would have been deadly to anyone inside the church at the time. Martha Paul and her daughter were spared. They were late to church because Marilyn had napped for too long. But since the explosion had happened 2 minutes after choir practice was due to begin, they didn't know if anyone else in their small group had survived.
But you said that choir starts at 6:25?
7:25 is when it starts. Okay. And the explosion happened at 7:27. So Martha and Marilyn roll up like a minute or two after the church explodes. And they think that everyone else is inside the church and has perished.
Yeah, I can't even imagine the emotions you're feeling, like the survival guilt, happy that you napped, like all
devastation.
Devastated.
These people,
the whole choir.
Yeah, these people were constantly together. This was like their friends and family, essentially. And yeah, they're thinking that everyone else has died. What they would soon find out was that nobody had died. No one had made it to choir practice on time for a variety of different reasons. And because of that, they all missed the explosion and survived.
Whoa. Wait, seriously?
Yes.
Even Martha?
Yeah, Martha too. She was late because her daughter napped and she had to wake her up and they were late together.
Oh, I missed that this is her.
But okay. Yes, all of them, the 15-person choir, and it was actually 17 people because there was going to be a few extra people that night. All of them, for separate reasons, were going to be late, which was unheard of for this choir, and they missed the explosion.
Whoa. I mean, this makes you feel like things happen for a reason.
Totally,
right?
Yeah. And this is where it definitely gets weird, because I cannot stress enough how on time everyone was to choir practice normally. It was extremely unlikely for anyone to be late, let alone everyone. In an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, Marilyn spoke about the choir, saying, quote, "On Wednesday evening, Mother expected all of us to be punctual. No one was ever really late. There might have been very, very few circumstances, but most often everyone was there all the time. I really can't think of a time that anyone came late." And the reasons they weren't there on time wasn't from one big factor like a storm or a road closure or an accident. They all just had things come up which kept them alive.
Wow. 15 people?
Yeah.
Separately each had a thing.
Correct.
Dude, I mean, what are the chances?
I literally have no idea. I don't even think you could calculate the like mathematical odds.
You give it a shot.
Well, I certainly won't.
Hey, well, I took probability and statistics in college.
Off the top of your head, what do you think the odds of that are?
1 in 21 trillion.
That's crazy odds.
And that's backed by solid math.
Yeah, I believe that to be true. As we know, Marilyn and Martha were kept from the rehearsal because Marilyn took a nap after dinner. Marilyn said, quote, "I was very tired and I wanted to rest for a very short period of time before going to the church practice, so I decided maybe a little 15-minute nap wouldn't hurt, and it ended up being a little bit longer, probably about half an hour."
Pulling pages out of my own book.
Yes.
I love this move.
Totally.
Fully support it.
Sure, but for Martha to be late would have been like a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Reverend Klempel and his wife loved to take their 18-month-old daughter, Marilyn, her name was also Marilyn, with them to church events, and the Wednesday night practice was a staple part of their week. But thankfully, they hadn't made it to the church on time that night either. That night, things had been running smoothly, and they were supposed to be on time, but just as they were about to walk out the door, Mrs. Klempel realized there was a stain on baby Marilyn's dress, so she decided at the last minute to change the baby's dress. Once she had made that decision, she realized there wasn't a dress that was ready to just be thrown on the baby, so she had to figure out if she wanted to spend a few extra minutes ironing a new dress or just go with the stained one. And she ultimately chose to take those few extra minutes, which was a very good decision because if she had chosen to just leave the stain, the couple and their baby definitely would have been at the church at the time of the explosion. They were still at home when the explosion happened, which saved their lives because even if they had been on their way and were anywhere near it, there was a very good possibility that they could have at least gotten injured in the blast. And like their 18-month-old baby could have been injured. It's odd enough that this couple was as late as they were, but everyone had similar types of situations. That evening, a man named Herbert Kipf was actually running ahead of schedule and was ready to leave his house when he remembered he had forgotten to complete one of the things on his to-do list for the day. He had been writing a letter that was sort of urgent and needed to be sent out fairly soon. And as he was about to head out the front door, he decided he should hang back for a few minutes to finish the letter before leaving. In an interview, he said, "That night I was writing a letter to our denomination headquarters, and it seemed very important for me to get it into the mail that evening. Fact of the matter is, my mother was hounding me to get going because the time was late already, but I felt it was more important to get it in the mail and drop it on the way to church." So that's extremely weird. He's never late. He didn't have to finish that letter that night. And his mother was like, "You really got to get going. You're late." But still, he chose to finish the letter. And it almost seemed like Herbert wasn't even sure why he felt it was so urgent to get the letter written and sent off, even though it would delay him. And it was the evening, so the mail carrier wouldn't have picked up the letter until the morning anyway.
Yeah, it was like the post office didn't have longer hours back in the day, right?
Not that I know of. And he seemed really, like, kind of shaken about it. This one small, kind of weird decision saved his life.
I mean, everyone has to feel that way. And then they all learn about each other's situations. I mean, kind of hard to argue that there's not some higher power at work, you know?
Yeah, if there's ever going to be a story that makes you kind of question it, at least.
They're going to bring it up at church.
Yeah. Right, right. So at the time of the explosion, Herbert was still at his desk finishing up the letter and was nowhere near the church. Only a few streets away from Herbert were two more church choir members. Two high school students, Dorothy Wood and Lucille Jones, were good friends and always showed up to choir practice and left together since they were neighbors, and 18-year-old Lucille would drive them every week. That Wednesday, there was a radio program on about the actor Edgar Bergen, who was best known for his ventriloquism act. And since it was 1950, if Lucille wanted to hear what was going to be said during the program, she had to sit there and listen to it. There was no hitting pause and coming back to it later, or looking it up later. But it's been said that her decision to sit down and listen to the radio show instead of going to practice was highly uncharacteristic for Lucille. She was never one to prioritize listening to the radio over being punctual to a church event. Lucille was also interviewed for the Unsolved Mysteries episode that was done about the story and said, quote, "I turned on the radio to listen to This Is Your Life. So I just sat down and listened and thought, well, I'd have time to make it up there on time. I don't know why I turned it on that night, but I turned it on and they said this was going to be Edgar Bergen's life, and I just decided I was going to listen to it." Lucille told Dorothy that the radio show would be over at 7:30, and then she would drive both of them to the church. And Dorothy didn't want to be late, but Lucille was her ride, so there wasn't much she could do. 15-year-old LaDonna Vandergript was a soprano in the group and was also in a somewhat similar situation to Lucille and Herbert. That evening, she had been working on her geometry homework before leaving and was really annoyed by one problem that she just couldn't figure out. So she told herself she needed to figure it out and finish her homework before she left for rehearsal. While she was working on that, around 7:23 p.m., Rowena Estes and her sister Sadie were sitting in their car ready to drive to church. They were trying to get their car started, but something was wrong with their car. The engine had been giving them trouble all day. They knew they were going to be late if they waited any longer, so since LaDonna only lived a couple miles away from them, they called her to see if she was even still at home, and if so, if she could give them a lift. And they were in luck. LaDonna was still at home, but she hadn't figured out her homework yet. And so she told the girls she really wanted to finish it before she left. She apologized to the girls that she wouldn't be able to give them a ride until she was ready to go. The girls were a little anxious at the idea of being even later than they already were, but once again, they didn't have a choice in the matter. And as it turned out, this was the best thing that could have ever happened to them.
That's so crazy. Someone just not being able to figure out their math homework.
Yeah. Or listening to a radio show or car troubles.
Wow. Okay. we're not even halfway.
No, yeah, we're not done. A machinist named Harvey All was late that evening because his wife had been out of town and he had to make dinner for his two young sons, get them organized and ready to leave. That way they could come with him to choir practice since he couldn't leave them at home alone. Thankfully for them, the kids were taking a little bit longer than he would have wanted to get them out the door, and he had lost track of time kind of talking to them, which isn't an uncommon thing to happen with kids. But it was uncommon for Harvey because usually his wife was at home to help him and he was never late to church. He also didn't typically take them with him to practice, so it's awful to think about what could have happened had they made it out the door on time.
Can I make a point now is that maybe a little lateness is a good thing.
This is helping your case
right?
So well.
I'm like, hey, it's fine. We could be late to brunch now.
So that the restaurant can explode without us?
You never know.
That's true. You never know.
Insane, but kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, not quite. A woman named Mrs. Leonard Schuster was also set to attend rehearsal with her young daughter, Susan. She and Susan would typically go together, but that night she needed to make a quick detour to her mother's house to help her with some preparations for a missionary meeting. That stop, which was supposed to be a quick one, went on a little bit longer than expected, which made it so Mrs. Schuster and her daughter weren't on time, which was, again, highly unlikely for them. They were always perfectly on time. A woman named Joyce Black actually lived across the street from the church and was also set to be on time that night and knew that she should start heading over to the church. But in her own words, she said, quote, "I was late because I was just plain lazy and I just didn't want to go out in the cold. And so I kept putting off going out the door. At last, I couldn't put it off any longer. So I put my coat on. And when I opened up the door and stepped outside, the church just disintegrated."
The moment she stepped outside?
Yes.
This one's wild.
I know.
Because this is just like, what, a vibe?
Yeah.
That struck?
This
a lazy
is like
vibe?
The most jarring one to me because Joyce had the shortest distance to travel and also didn't have something like really come up. She just didn't want to get out of bed. She was just being cozy, which like totally relatable.
I was going to say, nobody can relate more.
Yeah.
Than us.
I have plenty of moments where I'm a little too cozy and I don't want to get up, but that little extra cozy time saved her life, which is insane. And then she opens the door and the church immediately explodes in front
of her.
That's
a movie scene.
I know. Yeah.
Insane.
So okay. Next time you're thinking, hey, I should get up.
Right? See, this is
a terrible
message. Right?
No, it is crazy, though. She was steps away from the church, so even if she got up like 2 minutes earlier, she would have been killed in the blast. I mean, even 30 seconds, because she had to walk across the street. And if she was close enough to the church, it could have killed her.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy. She spoke about the immediate aftermath of the blast, saying, "What really impressed me was our sheet music and our songbooks were flying through the air. We had a lot of those things. It was really something to see. A real nice choir book fell right near me, and it was in pretty good condition, so I picked it up. I don't think anybody would care because I wanted to keep it." So the church exploded, and she grabbed a book.
She grabbed the book. She's like, "I don't think they're going to notice."
No, the church exploded.
I mean, honestly, how biblical is that? Like a perfectly undamaged book?
Oh, sure.
Like flies over after the explosion?
I mean, there were a couple books and like sheets of music and stuff. I don't really know how the
paper
and
books. How do you explain
that?
How does it get shot across the street?
The force?
It's just fine, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's more crazy that nobody was there.
Well, yeah, okay.
But yeah, no, the book also being untouched.
Come on, it's cool.
Pretty cool. All
in
all. You
just don't like to read.
Yeah, that's it.
You're anti-book.
Hater.
Yeah.
I'm anti-book. Yeah, that's me. All in all, there were 17 people who were spared that night. Typically, there would have been 15 people attending, but that night, had everyone showed up there on time, there would have been more people than normal. Only moments after the explosion, the choir members started showing up one by one to the scene and were stunned by the state of the church that they were all supposed to be in. Each person who showed up late was a huge relief because they had assumed everyone was inside the church, so whenever anyone got there, it was like they had been brought back from the dead, so it was amazing. The first people to show up, I believe, were Marilyn and Martha, who wholeheartedly believed that their entire church choir was inside waiting for them and then had all perished. It was only until each of the members showed up outside the church that the unbelievable truth was discovered. Before that moment, the members who had showed up late and found the church destroyed had been frantically searching through the rubble, hoping to find their friends alive. But then they realized everyone was accounted for. Marilyn Paul said, "When we found out that everyone was safe and that no one was in the explosion, we were standing there holding each other's hands, and one of the members said, 'Let's give thanks to God,' and we offered a prayer of thanksgiving that we were all indeed spared, and that no one lost their life in the explosion."
Wait, was the priest in there?
In the group or in the church?
In the church.
No, he was in the group, but he had been late because his baby's dress was stained.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say he's the one who turned on the heat, right?
He did, yeah. But then he left.
It's good.
Yeah, and these were all, of course, very devout people, but honestly, having that happen could make anyone believe in a higher power, like you said. I'm not a religious person myself, but I can completely see why they all stood together and prayed in that moment, because it truly felt like a miracle. Since this story is truly extraordinary and it took place in a church with the members of the congregation, this story has been used a lot as proof of God's miracle. Marilyn Paul said, "I believe that night, and no one will convince me otherwise, that God didn't want us there. We were spared and I'm very grateful." Herbert Kipp said, "If this had been a busload of people stopped by a flat tire or any such occurrence, it might be considered a coincidence, but where you have 10, 12, 15 people scattered throughout the entire city, and each of them detained by some trivial little thing, each different thing, it can't be." Lucille Jones added, "When I realized what had happened, I thought, well, if I wouldn't have been listening to This Is Your Life, my life would have been over."
That is super ironic.
Yeah. And like I said in the beginning, this story feels fake, but it's not. It's been documented in newspaper articles and magazines years after it happened. And there are plenty of eyewitnesses of people corroborating why all of these people were late to choir practice. And an investigation was done into the explosion, and it was found that it was due to a gas leak from an underground pipe. Firemen theorized that the gas leak seeped into the church and was ignited by the fire from the furnace, lit by the reverend that afternoon. It was perfect timing. Had it happened any later, even by 2 or 3 minutes, most likely one or two people would have been killed. if it was some kind of elaborate insurance scam, which I don't think it was, every single person, teenagers included, would have had to keep this secret for the rest of their lives. And it was covered by like national newspapers and magazines looked into the story and covered it. So something like that would not have been easy to cover up.
Yeah, I don't think that that's what they're doing.
No, I don't either.
At the church, people of God trying to get insurance money? Come on.
Well, crazier things have happened.
That's true, but you know.
But I don't think that that's the case for this story. It's just a humongous coincidence. The church was rebuilt in the same location, and while they were building, they met in a neighboring vacant church building. The church moved into the basement of that building in 1952. The cost of the completed church was $34,000, which was about half of the cost it would have been if there was no volunteer labor. So they had people from the community helping rebuild the church, which is really cool. Martha Paul was quoted as saying she thought the congregation got a clearer understanding of the meaning of faith, and it took a lot to undertake the rebuilding. And the story lives on, because, I mean, Beatrice is a really small town, and it's a pretty incredible story to happen.
Yeah, they're not going to forget about that one.
No.
Do they have, like, a monument or something to remind them of it, or...
Actually,
I would have to imagine, right?
Probably.
It's too crazy.
They rebuilt the church, so I imagine they probably have some sort of like plaque or something, you know?
I don't know if they like got in touch with the Pope or something. Be like, hey, Pope. is this a miracle?
Yeah. Hey, just so you know, a literal miracle happened here. Thoughts?
I think you can do that.
Was this the big guy upstairs or what?
And the Pope can be like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Pope would have been like, yeah, obviously.
I spoke to God and he was like, yeah. Yeah, I did that shit.
Right. No, it is really cool. And I mean, I don't know what it was, if it was just like intuition or I don't know. It's really cool though.
It's just so much to think about 15 people independently.
I know. And they all like couldn't even fully understand why they were choosing to be late, you know? Because like, it's not like it was like Lucille to listen to the radio show and like Herbert didn't have to write the letter just then and they could have brought their baby with the stain on the dress and like there were so many things. The lady who was too comfy could have just gotten up. Like,
yeah,
it's all so strange. But well, I thought the story was really cool because
it is.
What are the odds?
And yeah, the world may never know.
The world will never know. But that is where the first story comes to an end. And now we're going to talk about the Kentucky meat shower.
Wow. If it's fried chicken, I'm going to lose it.
It's not fried chicken, but that's pretty good.
Could you imagine?
The KFC like, meat shower?
Yeah, like Colonel Sanders is just dancing down on some chicken wings.
That'd be pretty cool. But this one's going a little fast and loose on we're talking about survival stories because...
It's meat.
This is just a meat
shower. Survive the meat.
It's just kind of interesting and I thought it would be fun to talk about. I think both of these stories were featured on Unsolved Mysteries because they're really weird. So, okay. So this, I guess the theme is Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay. Tell us about the meats.
Okay. So the story takes place in Rankin, Kentucky in 1876.
So long ago.
March 3rd, 1876. So the other story took place on March 1st, 1950. And this is March 3rd, 1876.
Whoa, is there a connection?
I don't think so, but it's kind of cool.
I'm starting to feel like the ancient aliens guy.
Aliens.
Yeah. Is this one aliens? The aliens rained meat down in 1876.
Could be.
100 years after the founding fathers.
So it was a Sunday, and that Sunday started out like any other. That afternoon, Rebecca Crouch, who lived 2 or 3 miles outside of a place called Olympian Springs in Barth County, Kentucky, was watching her grandson and making soap on her porch around noon. That day was a clear spring day. They lived on a plot of land that was around 80 acres, and they were surrounded by mountains, so it was probably a beautiful view. Maybe a slight chill in the air, but clear skies, no rain, nothing crazy. While making soap, she noticed what seemed to be pieces of meat falling out of the sky. She said she was 40 steps from her house when the meat began hitting the ground around her. She described the meat as grisly looking. She saw pieces as big as her hand hit the ground near her, and it made a snapping-like noise as it landed. Her first feeling was panic. She felt like this meant that someone she loved was dead, and this was like pieces of their body raining down around her, which wasn't the case, but I totally understand an anxious queen because like totally, right?
I mean, there's meat falling from the sky.
Right.
Like if you're calm, something's up.
Exactly. So she ran inside and got her husband, Alan, so that he could also witness what was going on.
She just like turns back. She's like, Alan!
No, literally. She runs inside. She's like, you're never going to believe what's happening.
No, she doesn't even say anything. She's just shaking. Meat. And she's like, meat.
Alan, meat.
No, just nothing. You know how like sometimes there's not enough time to meat.
Oh, totally. So Mr. and Mrs. Crouch believed that this was an event that was like a sign from God. And as they watched the meat rain down for a few minutes, they thought maybe...
Minutes.
Multiple minutes of meat raining down. And then it stopped and they thought maybe this was some kind of warning. Like maybe this was a prophecy or something. Once the meat rains down, then X will happen. I don't know.
It sounds like one of the plagues or like... Right. What is the like biblical story? The seven like...
Like the locusts and stuff?
Yeah. What do you call those?
I don't know.
Oh, no. It's the seven plagues.
Sure.
Because God was like pissed.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seemed like something biblical was happening, right? As they watched meat rain down on their farm.
Like, yeah, it's like after, on the seventh day, bear will rain from the sky.
Sure.
And it's because you're farming.
Badly.
On the bear territory.
Okay. Anyway, Alan went outside and picked up multiple pieces of this meat off of the ground to get a better look. After the event concluded, pieces of meat were found all over the ground and hanging from fences and trees, covering roughly 100 yards. Most of the pieces of meat were approximately 2 by 2 inches, and at least one of them was like 4 by 4 inches. So it was like the size of like your palm. Big hunks of meat. And the pieces weren't uniform, but there was a lot of it. One source described how there was enough meat to fill an entire horse cart, and Rebecca said that there was not less than half a bushel, which is somewhere around like a little less than 20 liters of meat pieces. I guess
liters.
A bushel was like a unit of measurement back then. And it was like a half a bushel was somewhere around like 17 and a half liters.
Interesting.
Yeah, doesn't really matter. Point is, it's a lot of random meat that fell from the sky. The animals on their farm were freely eating the meat after it fell, and a reporter asked Rebecca if any of them seemed weird after they ate it, and she said that the dog did become kind of sick and wasn't acting like himself after eating it, but she didn't expand on that, and I think that the dog, like, was fine. Like, it lived, but it was, like, maybe a little sick after it ate the weird sky meat.
Hmm.
The meat appeared to be beef. But according to the first report in Scientific American, two men who tasted it judged it to be lamb or deer. A local butcher named Mr. Frisbee decided it was his duty to go out and taste the weird meat as well and figure out what it was.
Could you imagine, like, being in the town square? You're a butcher. Come eat our weird mystery meat.
Mr. Frisbee, please taste the sky meat and give us your expertise. People told him eating it was a bad idea, but he said if a rooster or a cat can eat it and be fine, he'd be fine.
Are they cooking it?
I don't think so.
They're just eating it raw?
They're just eating the weird raw sky meat.
These people are metal.
He didn't swallow it. He just kind of chewed it a few times and spat it out. He said it didn't taste or smell like anything he had ever tasted before, but it did look like mutton, was his like professional butcher opinion.
What is a mutton?
Mutton is meat from an adult sheep that's usually at least 2 years old. It has a stronger flavor than lamb and is often used in stews and braises.
Okay.
Anyway, he said it looked like mutton, but it didn't even necessarily taste like mutton. He's like, I don't know, looks like this.
I don't know. So would you say that this is like 1 to 2, maybe medium to large size animals?
I don't know how many animals it would have come from. But they said they could, like, fill a horse cart with it.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, like...
Maybe 3?
More than one?
More than
That's
one.
Insane.
Definitely more than one.
Okay. Were there any bones?
I don't think so. I think it was just meat.
Just meat?
Yeah. He described it like a tender meat. He said he pulled it apart and there was a sort of fine, stringy fiber running through it. But he couldn't quite place what kind of meat it was. He said there was no blood on the meat, But there was, okay, trigger warning is kind of gross. There was a milky, watery fluid that oozed out of it.
What is happening? Is somebody just fucking with these people?
No, it like was 1876.
With like a trebuchet, trebuchet?
How could they pour meat from the sky? Rebecca Crouch watched it rain down.
For minutes?
Yes.
This is tough too. Tough Come to up. Replicate, but could yeah. you imagine you're just like trying to mess with people?
I mean, yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Raining
but...
meat?
Anyway.
How do you even begin to explain this?
Right. There are a couple theories that we're going to talk about, but
okay.
a local hunter by the name of B.F. Ellington was positive that it was actually bear meat. A local grocer also tried the meat after a week of it being outside.
Dude.
And it started to dry out and he didn't notice any weird taste, but he said that the smell was like a dead body, which like, yeah, it had been outside for a
week. It's
rotting
meat, dude.
Right.
He's like, my professional opinion is this is human.
This is rotten. What? It's like, yeah, kid.
Yeah, dude.
It's rotten, of course. It's been outside for a week, you weirdo. But nobody could agree where this meat came from. And once again, this event seemed fake, but there are official reports on it. It was reported by Scientific American magazine, the New York Times, and other publications around the country. There was a lot of skepticism surrounding the story at first. Rumors began flying about Rebecca Crouch calling into question her honesty, but people who knew her said that she was an extremely trustworthy person. Mr. Frisbee, the butcher, actually vouched for the family and said that they were members of the church and were very, very good people, and he said anything they said about the meat was as true as gospel. So Mr. Frisbee is laying it all down.
All right,
he's like,
Mr.
listen,
Frizz.
These people are good people. They're not lying. So the general consensus was that the Crouches were not lying about the meat shower. Some people thought maybe she could have wanted attention or to become famous from this wild tale, but it was 1876, so it's not like she would have gotten much fame out of it, and everyone around her said that that was very unlikely to be the case. So, assuming that this isn't a made-up story and that it actually happened, there are plenty of theories about how this could have happened. One of which was that the meat fell from the lunch basket of a passing balloonist, which would have made sense if it was like one or two pieces of meat, but it was so much more than that, making that theory highly unlikely. Because a passing balloonist, one, Mrs. Crouch most likely would have seen the balloon. Two, how could they fit that much meat into one like lunchbox?
Yeah, I don't know.
Even
you
if
just
it wasn't
had the whole thing filled up with meat.
Right. Like you would essentially have to fill up the entire balloon basket with this random meat. And also, what's the motive for raining down random meat on people?
I don't know, dude.
Right. So
to fuck around?
Sure, but it just seems like that theory is extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
Another theory was that the meat was actually frog eggs, like the goopy frog eggs that you find in ponds. You know what I'm talking about?
What? But they were saying there's like meat chunks the size of your palm. As you would say.
I say palm weird?
Yeah, palm. Oh.
Okay, whatever.
Palm.
It's just a New York thing, I guess. Anyway, the theory was that the frog eggs had been picked up by the wind and was like thrown over into the area of Mrs. Crouch's farm, which doesn't make sense because it wasn't frog eggs, for one. And two, Rebecca Crouch said that there wasn't like a lot of wind that day, and she said it was raining from the sky. It wasn't something that was caught in the wind and was like thrown into her yard. So that wasn't the case either. So like they're like, maybe it's frog eggs. And they're like, well,
no.
Actually, it's meat. So it's not.
Dude, yeah, it's like massive chunks of meat.
Right.
And no bones?
No bones.
I can't get over that because it's not like, I mean, I can't even begin to formulate a theory.
No, I know. Honestly, all the theories are kind of like, I don't know.
Not even close.
Yeah.
What else we got?
So the event and the meat was studied, and there are actually pieces of meat that have been preserved in formaldehyde and are still around to this day.
Whoa, they're like, this is the holy meat. We can't let it go.
Holy rain
meat. We'll solve the mystery one day.
At the time, the meat was eaten by animals. Some was collected and kept in alcohol, but there wasn't any huge effort to preserve the meat. Because the people at the time of the meat shower weren't thinking like, oh, some scientists in the future would love to study this meat. They just were like, hey, look, meat fell from the sky. How weird is that? So there wasn't...
It just went back to churning butter.
Right. So there wasn't much meat to study because not much of it had actually been preserved. One piece has been at Transylvania University for the last 150 years, which is apparently a private university in Lexington, Kentucky. They've studied the meat and tried to DNA test it, but everything has come back inconclusive because it wasn't stored correctly. It was in formaldehyde, which is an extremely harsh chemical and kind of destroys whatever is in it. About 3 months after the event, a man named Leopold Brandeis got a hold of some of the better preserved meat and identified the meat as nostoc, which is a type of cyanobacteria. These are words I am unfamiliar with, so forgive me. But nostoc is also known as star jelly, troll's butter, spit of moon, fallen star, and witch's butter. Again, all of these things I've never heard of.
What?
So apparently it's like this single cell organism found in a variety of both aquatic and terrestrial environments. And it's also like ancient. It was likely to be one of the first organisms on Earth that released oxygen into the atmosphere. So that's interesting. And I don't fully understand what it is, but from what I gather, it's this like blue green jelly like organism. Because the word nostoc comes from the English word nostril and the German word nasenloch, meaning also nostril, because it looks like nasal mucus or snot. But so basically, like, nostoc, when it's hydrated, like when it's wet and it rains, it like becomes hydrated and it looks like this green jelly-like substance. But when it's dry, you don't really notice it. So basically, it couldn't have been nostoc because it needs water to hydrate and to make it appear, and it wasn't raining. And also at the time, this scientist believed that nostoc came from like it rained down. It came with the rain, but actually it's just on the ground. And then when it rehydrates, it like reappears. So the theory was wrong for a bunch of reasons, but like...
I would like to venture one point.
Okay.
It's meat.
Right. So here's the other thing. It's meat.
It's meat, it's dude. Meat. So, it's not snot.
Yeah, weird single cell organism.
You're not even
snot.
Close. I mean, you could be, I could accept like, oh, the white mucus substance on the meat
sure.
was whatever the hell this is.
Yeah.
But the meat.
The meat part of it is meat.
Unaccounted for.
I agree. That was Brandeis's theory, but he ended up giving the meat sample to the Newark Scientific Association for further analysis, leading to a letter from Dr. Alan McLean, Hamilton, appearing in the medical record and stating that the meat had been identified as lung tissue from either a horse or a human infant. The structure...
What?
There's a quote that says the structure of the organ in these two cases are almost identical. The composition...
Wait, seriously?
Apparently.
An infant in a... Oh my God. An infant in a horse?
Have similar tissue structure from their lungs, I suppose.
You have no idea how hard I'm trying to not ask questions right now.
I appreciate that because
that you
I
don't have the answer
don't
to?
Don't have the answers, yes.
How? That's strange.
Yeah, no? So they said, I can't tell if it's from a horse lung or from a human infant lung. But
it kind of sounds like you don't know shit, dude. That seems like two different things.
Well, again, this meat has not been preserved very well, so it's you can't really do a lot of testing to it.
Sounds like a bunch of excuses to me.
Sounds like a load of barnacles to me.
Hoopla.
The composition of this sample was backed up by further analysis, with two samples of the meat being identified as lung tissue, three as muscle, and two as cartilage.
Interesting. It's hilarious to think that society advanced to a point where people are getting paid money to do this.
To test
to
sky
do this
meat.
Analysis, yeah.
Yeah.
At like a university.
Yeah, super weird. But I mean, it's a perfect thing to study because it's like such a huge mystery.
Yeah, no, I totally get why. But just to think about how disconnected this is from any like seeming values, just other than like curiosity.
Oh yeah, total curiosity.
It's just interesting.
It is funny.
It's funny to me.
According to Scientific America, 7 samples were examined by multiple scientists, all of whom confirmed that 2 of the samples were lung tissue, 3 were muscle tissue, and 2 were cartilage, as I've said. So at the time, there was a crazy theory about a knife fight that happened nearby. there was a theory that two brothers had gotten into a knife fight and then a rogue twister came along and picked up the flesh that I assume they cut off of each other, and then it rained down on Rebecca Crouch. Which is untrue, because there was never a report of two dead brothers or like extremely disfigured brothers, because they would have been torn apart with the amount of flesh that rained down on this area of land. So that's completely ridiculous. But that was like another theory that had been thrown around, at least at the time, in like 1876, I assume. They were like, well, probably it was from a knife fight. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, where are the bones?
Exactly. You're asking the questions. Also, the meat was like in small strips. So like, if it was from a knife fight, these two people would have had to have been cutting tiny slivers like of each other.
Politely filleting each other.
Literally, yeah. So here's one of the most likely theories.
All right, hit me.
Could have been vulture vomit.
Vulture vomit.
Yeah. So this theory was first proposed by a local farmer, and then Dr. L.D. Castenbean wrote about it in Louisville Medical News in 1876. Castenbean was another person who had been able to get his hands on a sample of the meat, and during his testing, he set it on fire and observed that it smelt exactly like rancid mutton. He said vultures, which are native to Kentucky, could have been feasting on dead sheep or a flock of sheep, and then suddenly needed to fly away. Vultures have this weird evolutionary trait where if they're spooked or there's a predator nearby, they're able to regurgitate their most recent meal in order to make themselves lighter so that they can fly faster away from danger. So if these vultures had been feasting on something, the meat would be undigested, and then maybe they got scared and they flew away and threw it up all over Rebecca's property. It's the only theory that makes any kind of sense, in my opinion. Even though it seems far-fetched still, I don't even really know if it could be true, because Rebecca said it was a clear day, there was no rain, and there was also no, like, vultures flying overhead, at least from what she remembers. And if it had been the case, there would have had to have been, like, quite a few vultures to throw up that amount of meat. So yeah, she probably would have seen them.
Yeah, but you could see, like, what, 6 to 10 vultures doing this? Do they go in packs, or...?
I guess it's plausible to think that she didn't notice the vultures because there's the meat raining. Yeah. She's not paying attention.
She's running inside, shaking to tell Alan.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So I think that
this is like, I'm imagining when you're asking me to kill a spider, like it's the same energy.
Probably that much frantic energy. Totally. This is like the only theory that I feel like has any kind of reality to it.
Yeah, I think I'm team vulture. The only other thing, okay, so let me try and come up with something.
Sure, come
on
up with
the fly,
a
because this is fun.
Because you're a scientist. Go ahead.
And I am. I'm a computer scientist.
True.
Yeah, what I was thinking is like something would have had to suck it up in the air. So like the twister thing or some other like weather storm.
But there was no storm that day.
Do you remember we told a story about a... It was like a paraglider, like a professional paraglider who was doing her thing. I guess like the sport is they have a parachute and then they just try and like ride the wave.
Yeah, she
like
got sucked up into like
sucked
a
up.
Rogue storm.
Right.
Sure.
That happened and it like flings the meat miles away.
That still feels extremely unlikely to me.
Right.
Because
yeah,
she would have seen the storm at least. It's not like a rogue storm would have like happened far away and then thrown meat that far.
You never know.
I don't know. I mean, I appreciate the attempt at coming up with a theory, but I don't think that that's what happened.
Yeah, the birds make more sense.
Okay, cool. So people have tried to get more answers, but since it happened so long ago and there isn't much meat left to test, it's unlikely we'll ever know where it came from. It's just kind of weird. Like, this is just kind of one of those things that's going to continue to be an unsolved mystery, which is interesting. But there is a professor of art at Transylvania University named Kurt Godey, and he's been fascinated by this story since he heard about it like decades ago. And then one day he was cleaning out a storage closet at the university and came across an old jar that was made of glass and had a cork in it. And there was a chunk of white meat inside a yellow liquid. And on the jar, there was the label Olympia. So it was a meat sample from the meat shower. He took it to the biology department at the university, but the sample was too old to test, so there was no new information that could be gleaned from that. But he went to a taste lab in Cincinnati to get them to analyze the flavor compounds of the meat and then put that into jelly beans.
Dude.
So
wait, is he trying to start a business off of this?
No. But so he basically wants people to taste the jelly beans and tell them what it tastes like. He's like, what kind of meat is this? What kind of meat is this? So he basically took these rancid meat jelly beans back to Kentucky and then went around the town and handed out these weird meat jelly beans and had people taste them to try to figure out what the meat was. But the flavor was so rancid that they didn't get any information from it. He basically just made a bunch of people taste rancid jelly beans.
Dude, this sounds like a YouTube challenge.
Right, like, yeah.
You know?
No, like, for sure.
This sounds like something Mr. Beast would do.
I was just thinking Mr. Beast, yeah.
Yeah, dude, it tastes like formaldehyde because it's been fermenting for, I don't know, a century.
It's 150-year-old vulture regurgitation flavor, probably.
Probably. Like,
vulture vomit, 150 years old.
With that being said, I want to try it now.
I don't.
I'll try it.
I don't.
I'll give it a shot.
Well, you have fun.
What's
with
this
that.
Guy's name?
Something,
Kurt?
Something Goatee. Yeah.
Goatee.
Kurt. Yeah, Kurt Goatee. But that's the story.
Goatee's Beans.
Of the Kentucky meat shower, Goatee Beans, sure.
Yeah. Well, this is a fun one. I enjoy it. It's not, I guess it's kind of survival if you consider the weird, maybe, scare of it all.
Sure. Or like maybe a meat could have hit someone in the head and they could have died. I don't know. I realize I'm being a little fast and loose with our podcast today, but it's a story that I found extremely interesting and it kind of fit into the theme of unsolved mysteries. So I thought we might as well just have a fun day. Why not talk about some interesting stuff that we will never be able to know the true answers of, you know?
True. I usually don't like this type of when it's unsolved, but
yeah,
today was fun. And it's also fun to think about the chunks of meat that are just sitting in a university.
Somewhere. In a small jar in the back of a storage closet, sitting in formaldehyde for 150 years. Interesting.
Like, I truly, like, if that exists there, like, does every university have something weird like this? Or, like, weird shit that they just have laying around?
Totally.
Like,
probably. I mean, we have a mummy.
Yeah, but, like, they know, like, that, to me, for whatever reason, makes
is less
more
weird.
Sense. Yeah.
Well, I guess it is less weird. It's still cool, but it's less weird than random meat that rained from the sky.
Do they actually have a mummy?
Yeah, we saw it. The mummy, the child mummy at the university.
Oh.
It's like in the museum.
Damn.
Anyway, it's not sky meat.
Yeah, no, it makes me feel like there's a ripe opportunity for a TV show here.
Maybe.
You know? Like weird shit in universities.
Hey, I would watch that.
Right?
I would watch the shit out of that. I just want to know what possessed that man to go to a taste lab in Cincinnati to specifically have them make rancid meat beans and then pass them out to unsuspecting people in Kentucky and say, hey, I know this happened 150 years ago, but I turned this rancid meat into a jelly bean. Would you be like, willing to taste the weird jelly bean and tell me what meat it reminds you of? Like, Was he manic? Like,
I don't know. Maybe he wanted to know so bad.
Well, clearly he wanted to know so bad.
I don't know. It could also just be a joke or like a prank.
It's not a prank. I mean, maybe it's a prank. I don't know.
It sounds like a prank to me.
Does. I just wish I could have seen it. Yeah, I guess the theme is also like loosely religion unintentionally. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah. Kind of,
you know,
cool.
You got to confront the things you can't explain. And
sure, totally.
Religion is definitely one of the ways you can do that.
Definitely.
But I think the second one, I don't know if God was raining down meat.
No, I don't think so either.
He doesn't have time, right? He's so busy.
Right.
Supposedly. I mean, what was their theory? You know, when they were thinking that, oh, this is a sign from God. Like, what was their conclusion? Like,
I don't think they came.
Then we have to make more soap.
I don't
something.
Think they came to any like conclusion about what the meaning behind the meat shower was, but the Crouches' first thought was that this was a sign from God. So I don't know. I mean, it was 1876, for Christ's sake. And also meat was raining from the sky. So like, it's not crazy to think that their first thought was, this is probably God. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But I just would have thought that they would think like, oh, now we have to sacrifice a lamb. You know,
I guess I don't know. It happened so long ago. And like the publications that came out around the time weren't necessarily looking into that. So like, the information is limited. But we have enough to know that it happened, and like the few people who like randomly tasted the sky meat who that sat outside for a week, and the guy was like, kind of tastes bad. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, Trevor.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Yeah, well.
People are weird. But anyway, hey, if you're putting off doing something because you're a little extra cozy, don't feel so bad, because maybe you're stopping yourself from being exploded.
It might just save your life.
Yeah, and I'm good with leaving that as a final message. It might just save your life.
Relax. Be a little late. Stay in bed a little bit longer. I mean, what could possibly go right?
Hey, that's what I want to ask. What could go right?
What could possibly go right for you
late? But anyway, what's your good thing?
My good thing is that I ran a 5K.
Hey, come on, 5K.
Completed it in 28-ish minutes.
You had good time.
I would say that that's pretty good, given that I did no training.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, because I got on a wait list, and I was like, no way, because I was over 1,500th on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, no way that I get in, right? And so I got in last minute, and I was just like, well, we'll see what happens. And yeah, I'm pretty happy with that.
You kind of crushed.
Yeah, it was fun. So that's my good thing. What's yours?
My good thing is that we have our friends coming to town in a couple days, and we're going to probably dance a little bit.
Fuck it up a little bit.
We're going to have a little boogie. We're going to go to a bar and shake our little butts.
Shake ass.
Yeah. Which is something you do with your friends, and I'm excited to do it because I haven't done it in quite some time. I didn't realize how much I had been yearning to truly shake ass until we went to a Mexican restaurant with our friends, and the Mexican restaurant was like kind of bumping some music, and we were standing in line like waiting to get in, and I just couldn't help but dance. And I was like, oh, actually, I need to shake ass now. And I didn't. Unfortunately, but we have a scheduled ass shake coming for this weekend, so I'm excited to let loose a little.
Yeah, it's been a minute. We don't be doing like full binge drinks anymore.
No, yeah, we're late 20s now. we're pretty far removed from.
We're at the point where you got to make it count. Like, it's got to be worth the hangover.
Yeah, we enjoy getting into bed at like 10 p.m. now.
I really do. So I really do.
If we get home before midnight on the weekend, we're like, yes.
Like, no, I love going exciting. To dinner at 7, and then we're back home at like 9:30.
Oh yeah, we're regularly home well before midnight, but you know, I'm just saying.
I know. It was nicer when we had like episodes of Severance.
Oh, I miss it. And we also finished Yellow Jackets. Womp womp.
Oh.
We'll find a new show. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this one. I know it was a little bit different than what we usually go for, but hell, live a little, right? Check out our Patreon at patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We have bonus episodes over there and a bunch of cool stuff. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival and you'd like to share with us and possibly hear on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. You can also find the link to our merch shop in our Instagram bio. We have a TikTok that is nottodaypodcast and a Twitter that is nottodaypodcast with a T, and then a podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.